don't need no education. We don't need no thought control.
Welcome to Education Nation, where we tackle the biggest issues in American education. Your host is the headmaster of Liberty Classical Academy, Rebecca Hagstrom, along with co-host Mark Durkin. School is now in session.
Well, good morning and welcome to Education Nation. This Saturday morning, I am your host, Rebecca Hagstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Mark Durkin. Good morning, Mark.
And it's another good Saturday. How are you?
It is. I know. And now I know that we have schools in session all over the state. It's not just some of the private schools, but everyone's been in school now.
And, that's right.
Hopefully has enjoyed a first good week of school. But on that topic of schools, last week, if you joined us, we covered the case of a transgender kindergarten student at Nova Classical Academy. And as I said last week, this story goes much beyond Nova, and it's really not about Nova at all anymore because this has grown to be much more of a nationwide issue. And we referred to a Minnesota transgender toolkit that was developed at the Minnesota Department of Education. And we know that that was distributed to all of the districts across the state of Minnesota and encouraging them to use it. And they called it a toolkit for the safe and supportive schools for transgender and non-gender non-conforming students. That's the title of the toolkit. And the toolkit is touted as a non-binding guide with information about providing welcoming environments for all students and guidelines for school officials to support transgender and gender non-conforming students. And Kevin Lindsay, the state's human rights commissioner, said that the toolkit stems from a desire to combat bullying in schools.
Now, if you remember back in 2014, it was Governor Dayton who signed a bullying prevention bill into law that was more formally known as the Safe and Supportive Schools Act. And at the time, the governor said, quote, "Nobody in the state or nation should have to feel bad about themselves for being who they are. This law says, quote, not in Minnesota," end of quote. But, you know, in a twist of irony, I mean, it's the opponents of this toolkit that say they are on the receiving end of what feels like bullying. John Helmberger, the CEO of the Minnesota Family Council, stated, quote, "Concerns for gender-conforming students and parents are ignored and dismissed," end of quote. And many feel the toolkit encourages teachers to teach a false conception of gender. And another common sentiment is growing number of parents that are feeling that their parental authority is being undermined. And perhaps the most troubling component of the toolkit is politicians paving the way for the allowance of males to enter female spaces such as public bathrooms, showers, mm-hmm. and locker rooms. Mm-hmm. Now, last week we heard from parents Jamie Knippel and Emily Zenos. As concerned parents, they shared their experiences as they pertain to the changes in curriculum that eventually led Nova Classical Academy to agree to a gender inclusion policy that included no notice or opt-out for parents. And Jamie and Emily, they join us in studio again today to discuss the details of Minnesota's toolkit that is available for all of the state school districts. Ladies, thank you so much for joining us again this morning.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're so happy to have you back in the studio with us today. Emily, you've been a very vocal proponent for how these transgender efforts when it comes to bathrooms and locker rooms have actually been anti-women and how women will be most impacted by these rules. And you've spoken pretty extensively on this topic. Could you share with our listeners why biology isn't bigotry?
Yeah, I'd be glad to. This is one of the bigger concerns that I have with this issue. So I work with two different organizations here in Minnesota, Ask Me First Minnesota, which is a project of Minnesota Family Council. And we're specifically focused on how gender identity policies and laws harm women and the harm that gender identity protections policies laws harm school children. I also work with an organization called Hands Across the Aisle. We're a national, actually international coalition of women who come from both the right and the left. Hmm. So we have conservative Christians, we have Catholics, we also have lesbians and radical feminists. And we're all working together because we recognize that biology is an unchangeable, immutable fact about humanity. Mm-hmm. You cannot change your sex by any means.
Right.
And what happens when you change laws to say that access to facilities like locker rooms, showers, and bathrooms should be based on gender identity instead of sex, anyone can use that room or those spaces based on how they feel. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing to stop any man from using any woman's facility, whether or not little girls are using that space, whether or not he's a sex offender. You know, again, not to say that, you know, we're claiming that people who feel that they're transgender are sex offenders. Mm-hmm. But the issue is that these laws and policies always state that anyone who feels that they're a woman can use that space, and there's no restrictions whatsoever put on their access. Mm. That's a problem.
Yes.
If mm-hmm. women have no way to, you know, ensure that their private spaces are safe, then they don't have safe spaces anymore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that is a long list of things that is women only that will be taken away.
Exactly.
Not just bathrooms and locker rooms.
Hospital rooms. Mm-hmm. Those are designated by sex. We've got prison cells. Those are designated by sex.
Women's shelters.
Women's mm-hmm. homeless shelters. Those are designated by sex. Women's domestic violence shelters. Those are designated by sex. But when you pass laws and policies that allow those spaces to be used by anyone with a quote-unquote female gender identity, then they're no longer female-only spaces. And you can only imagine what that would be like to mm-hmm. take refuge in a women's domestic violence
yes.
shelter only to find that the person sharing the room with you is a man.
Right, right. Boy, you raise some very important points here. I don't know that anybody has ever thought it through to that degree, including mm-hmm. myself. I know I certainly haven't thought about that. I've certainly thought about it from the perspective of sports and girls' sports, and I think, well, how can Title IX survive if we're going to now let biological males who identify as females play on their teams? And we know that physically they are every bit as much boys as they were born to be. And I know that there are, you know, physicians that will maybe tell people and promise them that with surgery and such that they can change their gender. But in all actuality, as you say, sex is an immutable fact, and it really cannot biologically be changed.
Absolutely.
At the core, no matter how many
even when measures are taken, like mm-hmm. surgery or hormone treatments, it doesn't
right.
change the fact that a man's body is larger, his skeletal structure is larger, he has more red blood cells. Those things don't change.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, as an aside note here, I have already been reading a couple of articles where young males identifying as females have beat out their female competitors mm-hmm. and come in first at state. I think it actually might have happened in Alaska in a running
track race.
Oh, you're familiar with that.
And that also happened in Connecticut.
Did it?
A girls' high school track team.
Yeah. So really the whole purpose, I think, that people had in mind when they put Title IX into place in the first place back in the 70s was to protect the rights of female athletes and females in the schools. And instead, it seems that it's being turned on them now, once again.
It's pretty regressive in nature.
Right, right. Very, very interesting. Well, so this Minnesota toolkit that we referred to earlier addresses the Title IX and Minnesota Human Rights Act, and they both declare that it is an unfair discriminatory to deny any student the full and equal enjoyment of an educational institution such as a public school. And schools ensure full and equal enjoyment of public accommodations for students where they are not stigmatized or segregated from the rest of the student population while exercising their rights to the public accommodation. Well, that language is very much in line with the 7th U.S. Circuit Court, which ruled in May in Whitaker versus Kenosha Unified School District. So this is in Wisconsin.
Yep.
That a policy that requires an individual to use a bathroom that does not conform to his or her gender identity punishes that individual for his or her gender nonconformance, which in turn violates Title IX. So that's how they are interpreting it in that particular case. And I actually just read an article this morning that case may very well be headed to the U.S. Supreme Court because it kind of begs the question, what about the conforming individuals? Mm-hmm. And just as we spoke about earlier, it almost seems regressive for women's issues that, you know, have been such an important part of our history in the last 50 years of trying to give women advantages and rights that they were denied for so long.
Right, and that's why we have laws like Title IX, because women have a physical disadvantage. Yeah. We needed Title IX to defend their access to sports and educational opportunities. So now it seems we're slowly losing that.
Yeah, yeah, it sure seems that way.
I think it seems we're quickly losing
that. Yeah, true.
Yes, things are happening very quickly.
Well, the toolkit also addresses restrooms, and we've alluded to that a little bit here in the previous section. And the toolkit says that transgender and gender nonconforming students should be afforded the opportunity to use the restroom of their choice. And for those that are uncomfortable with using a bathroom with a transgender or nonconforming student, well, get a load of this. The one raising the objection can be provided a private space, such as a single-user restroom, provided that the action of the school officials does not result in stigmatizing the transgender and gender nonconforming students. So, I mean, with mere suggestions that are being offered in schools that adopt the toolkit, I mean, what is the likelihood that schools would make the necessary accommodations, though, for students that object? Or is that just to appease, do you think, you know, those who are experiencing that objection?
Well, I think that's a logistical nightmare, too,
right,
because you're going to have a bunch of 14-year-old girls who don't want to be in a space with boys that are changing. And now you're telling those girls, hey, we're going to you no longer have access to your facility then. Mm-hmm. It just is it's a crazy logistical nightmare for these schools.
And even if they add one space, we're going to have a line outside of that.
Yeah, 14-year-old girls.
Right. Yeah, anytime that schools designate bathrooms or other private spaces by gender identity instead of sex, 100% of the students in the school now lose their privacy in those spaces. So like Jamie said, it's a logistical nightmare because now the only available privacy is in the maybe one or two single stall bathrooms that that school may already have.
Right.
That doesn't make any sense.
No, it certainly doesn't.
I think a thought to follow that up, too. There was a recent University of Minnesota study that showed that only 3% of Minnesota teens are confused about their sexual identity.
Yeah, yeah. So we're going to ask all the other 97% to try
to get in line and wait for the
get
one
get in line and use
one,
the right
stall,
for the one right. stall, exactly.
Yeah, and there are plenty of ways to be respectful and kind without sharing your bathroom.
Right, right, absolutely. And I want to emphasize that, too. I'm glad you bring that up, that no one here is advocating for bullying of these kids.
No.
They're just asking for fair treatment for themselves as well.
Absolutely.
And
there are compassionate accommodations that can absolutely be made for students that are struggling to accept who they are as a male or a female. And, you know, if you have a few students in the school who need special accommodations, then that's something that a school can logistically do.
Right.
That's very possible.
Right.
So there's no reason that we can't meet those needs.
Absolutely.
And schools have been doing that since the dawn of this, you know, they've been accommodating it just fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we know that the difference in the sexes has gone back, you know, all the way to the beginning of time. So this is a cross-cultural agreed upon idea that we have males and females that is suddenly being upended just in the last couple of years. So, very interesting to see the speed at which it's taken hold. Well, schools, when we look at the toolkit, they're also addressing names and pronouns as part of this Minnesota toolkit. And they say that schools should not assume a student's name, gender identity, or pronoun. Instead, the official should ask the student the requested name and the pronouns that that transgender student would like used. So when students are referred to by the wrong pronoun by their peers or by a school staff member, students may feel intimidated, threatened, harassed, or bullied. This could cause all sorts of legal issues, don't you wonder? I think about that anti-bullying legislation that was passed back in 2014, and even back then it was very controversial because it was understood that students can undergo retraining in the school by a school official without the parents actually even being notified. So now apply that to this issue. If your child accidentally or maybe repeatedly refers to another student by the wrong pronoun that that student doesn't want that day. And what about the kids who switch back and forth? How are you supposed to keep up with that? Because there are that those students are out there, too, who say, well, right. today I think I'm a girl, tomorrow or today I think I'm a boy. And it kind of goes back and forth. And there's no way students could be expected to keep up with that. And so if they're now then going to be subject to retraining by a school official without their parents even noticing or being informed, boy, that's a cause for alarm. I know it would alarm me as a parent.
Right. And this already happened just this last week at Rockland Academy outside of Sacramento, California, where a girl who had a friend who was a boy from the previous school year saw him on the playground and said hello to him and called him by his name. And a teacher right there on the spot reprimanded the student because this girl was not familiar with the fact that this boy was, you know, confused about his sexual identity and was sent to the principal's office. And, you know, it just was a real
These
traumatic
are young
experience.
Children. Can you imagine the trauma that that poor child would be going through? Mm-hmm. And on that note, in California, there's actually a bill that has passed the California Senate that, if passed in the assembly, could threaten jail time for anyone who refuses to use a transgender person's preferred pronoun. 1 year in prison or up to $1,000 fine. I mean, this is not any small consequence here. And the legislation would actually start with and not end with nursing homes and care facilities, and it would allow residents to use the bathroom of their choice regardless of biological sex. So just like you were referring to earlier, it does spill over into other realms of our culture. And this legislation is targeting nursing homes and lawn care facilities because people groups there are vulnerable and they typically garner sympathy. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't stop there. The bill's author in California, State Senator Scott Wiener, makes it clear that religious views and those who hold religious objections in accordance with this with their conscience won't hold weight in public areas. And that's one of the things that concerns me. Here's a quote from Wiener. Everyone is entitled to their religious view, but when you enter the public space, when you are running an institution, you are in a workplace, you are in a civil setting, and you have to follow the law. Now, one of the things that we want to refer to here is our show a few weeks back where we talked about the difference between freedom of religion and freedom of worship and how words do matter. Mm-hmm. And those are not accidental exchanges. Those who would use the term freedom of worship are trying to limit people's freedom of religion to just their own private homes or the four walls of a sanctuary in a church. And that's why words do matter and why it's so important, because we have to help our public understand that freedom of a religion is a right given us by God, not by our government. They're that's not right. the ones who get to tell us. And so we need to make sure that people understand that we're not just limited to freedom of worship inside the privacy of our own homes or a silent prayer, but that we can have our own conscience to decide what we believe is right or wrong in keeping with our religious faith.
That's right. That's yeah. right. And to live it out.
And to be able to live it out as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to take a short time out here on Education Nation. And when we return, we're going to talk about Alliance Defending Freedom and North Star Law and Policy Center and their warnings to school districts that the Minnesota Department of Education guidelines violate student privacy rights. We'll discuss this and more right after the break. Stay tuned. And welcome back to Education Nation. I'm your co-host, Mark Durkin, along with host Rebecca Hagstrom. And we're also joined in studio again with Jamie Knippel and Emily Zenos, discussing the Minnesota Department of Education's recent passage of the Minnesota Transgender Toolkit as an option for school districts. The department's aim with the toolkit is to present these policies with the goal of admitting students to areas such as bathrooms, locker rooms, and showers, and to assign overdate accommodations for school trips, as well as forcing school staff and peers to use pronouns and names that fit the student's perceived gender identity instead of their biological sex. Last week, we spent a lot of time discussing how the authority of parents is being undermined in this movement. Now, I want to address this with both Emily and Jamie. Throughout your journey of raising awareness, you know, what have you discovered in terms of what some of the most pertinent false information the organizers of the toolkit are passing off as truth in an attempt really to convince the school districts to receive and implement the agenda?
Well, I think one issue is that you'll hear people claiming that students who are struggling to accept their sexual identity have no bathroom to use, or that they have no locker room to use. That's just not the case. No one is being denied access to these facilities. Everyone has access to them. But you have to use them according to your biological sex, mm-hmm. yes. because that's what ensures privacy in schools today. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really important to remember, too, that if you're granting access to these spaces based on gender identity and instead of sex, then you are violating, you're allowing the violation of the privacy of 100% of the people in those areas.
Right, right. I do think that that gets forgotten when people discuss this. They're thinking about the one or two children that are struggling with their sexual identity rather than all of the other kids. And, you know, also, I know from looking at the Minnesota State High School League rules that they, because they were dealing with this issue a few years ago, there doesn't need to even be a doctor's signature saying that a student is struggling with their sexual identity. They just have to have a statement from some health professional, which could yep. count even as their high school counselor. And so, therefore, what is preventing, you know, other students from maybe playing that game, or maybe actually even getting confused because this is kind of a popular thing right now in the media, and crossing over into those realms and really, I guess, causing a student of another gender to feel unsafe because of their presence.
Right. And, you know, it's important. It doesn't matter what the motivations are right. for that boy to be in the girls' locker room. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if he's there because he's very confused or if he has nefarious purposes. He's there.
Right.
Just
mm-hmm.
his being there and setting foot in that room is violating the privacy of all right. of those girls. Doesn't right. matter
right.
why.
Yeah, I even think about, we were members of a club when our kids were little. And I'll tell you what, after the age of four, my boys were no longer allowed into the girls' locker room at four.
Right.
But they're just 4 years old, really? Does anybody care? But, you know, things have come that far that in 15 years, or I guess my youngest is 22, so I guess I should say in 22 years, we now have changed that much. And that's pretty shocking, because that was such a big issue at the club for many, many years, that make sure your children are, and they made family lockers or family locker rooms for those of us who were with our children who were the opposite gender of ourselves.
Which is a compassionate accommodation. Yeah,
right. Yes. And I didn't go complaining to the front desk saying, no, wait a minute, I don't want to have to go to this single bathroom.
I think the other thing that it does is it makes girls specifically, and boys, I suppose, but feel like they should be concerned that they are concerned with their privacy, and that's not fair to girls.
Right,
they
that
have
they should
every
be
right
afraid to,
be, to
assert themselves
right.
and assert their need for privacy.
Right.
Right.
They should have every right to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. absolutely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, another falsehood that's being spread is that schools do a better job with kids than their parents do. That's absolutely not the case. You know, parents are the primary educators of their kids. Parents have the right to oversee their child's education so that they can ensure their child is raised according to their values and what's important to them as a family. So, you know, there are some serious concerns that I have and that I think a lot of parents have about this toolkit supplanting parental authority and allowing schools to make decisions that can easily become medical decisions that are irreversible in some kids' lives mm-hmm. without parental approval. Mm-hmm. That's something I think any parent would object to.
Absolutely. That is, and like I said, I think earlier in the show, even the 2014 anti-bullying legislation, same thing, where they are supplanting the parents. We know what's best, so we're going to retrain your child without your permission if we believe that they are exhibiting bullying behavior, which can be defined as things that might fall under religious freedom rather than actual bullying. The word bullying is so It's a hostile term, and it's used to silence and shut people down. And just speaking up for your own religious freedom shouldn't be considered bullying. Bullying is when you are hostily harming another person. And I think we need to hold sight of that, too, and not lose sight of that, I should say.
And the lines become blurred, though, when everything becomes feelings-oriented. Well, we have about 3.5 minutes to go here, but I just wanted to touch on another blatantly false premise in the toolkit that's warning schools that failing to require the use of students' preferred pronouns might be considered sexual harassment under Title IX. You know, Title IX is a federal law that is rooted in biological realities, which is designed to create a level playing field for female athletes, and has accompanying regulations that expressly permit schools and school districts to designate locker rooms, restrooms, and other facilities by biological sex. Minnesota law does the same, and it would seem to me that this is violating, you know, both state and federal laws.
Mm-hmm. And that's definitely something that I referred to earlier as well, that it seems that this type of thought process actually goes against Title IX rather than being protected by Title IX. But again, I'm not an attorney, and I'm sure that some of this will probably end up playing out in the courts over the course of the next several years. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know that both the transgender agenda and the toolkit is often associated with the conservative belief system. Is opposition to the transgender agenda a conservative issue, or are there other groups opposed to its aims?
Yeah, there are absolutely other groups. Last week I mentioned Hands Across the Aisle Coalition, which is something that I'm a part of. If people want to check that out, they can go to Hands Across the Aisle on Facebook, or they can go to handsacrosstheaislewomen.com mm-hmm. and have a look at our website. But we're a group of women who are both conservatives, women on the in the center, and women who are on the radical left, progressive women, lesbians. We're all united in the belief that biology is unchangeable, and that there is real harm that will come to women and women's rights if we protect gender identity instead of sex in law. Mm-hmm. So I'd encourage people to check that out, and don't feel alone. Don't feel that on the right, or if you aren't on the right, if you're in the center, or if you're a classical liberal or a progressive, you have friends who feel the same way.
And just a final question, you know, what can parents do to ensure that they have control over their children's education?
Well, just, you know, find out what your rights are. Go ahead and look into that. Make sure you've done your homework. Participate in your kids' school board meetings. Make sure that you've united with other like-minded friends.
And I think if you do find yourself in a situation where you're facing transgender ideology at your school, you need to take action. And what we did with the Minnesota Family Council here in Minnesota was great. They were a great resource for us. But if you're in a different state, there's Family Policy Alliance. And they do a wonderful job in many states. So I would just say use them as a resource. Find out if you might be the action person in your state. Trust me, there are more people out there that would love to help. And I would just go to familypolicyalliance.com and start from there.
Okay. And Emily, you are on a Facebook page as well called Ask Me First. Is that right?
Well, actually, I have a Hands Across the Aisle Facebook page.
Okay.
And if people want to contact me and learn more about Ask Me First and that project, they can contact me at askmefirstmn@gmail.com.
askmefirstmn@gmail.com
That's
to
right.
Talk to Emily Zenos about this even further. Well, I am so thankful for the two of you being in studio last 2 weeks, Jamie and Emily. We just thank you, and we are thankful for the work that you are doing, and we ask our listeners to continue looking into this topic themselves, and then join us here again next week on KLBB Radio.